Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. According to a 2011 report by Harvard's Graduate School of Education, we place too much emphasis on a college education as the single pathway to success in America. Today, more and more experts say that career and vocational training can also lead to a middle-class paycheck. Here to talk about that are Dr. Richard Makin, president of the Central Pennsylvania Institute of Science and Technology, located in Pleasant Gap, and Dr. David Passmore, a distinguished professor of workforce education and development at Penn State. Thank you both so much for joining us.
It's good to be here with you.
Good morning, Patty.
The Harvard Graduate School of Education issued a report in 2011 called Pathways to Prosperity, and in it, they questioned the emphasis on a four-year college degree as the single pathway to success. First of all, Dr. Passmore, what was the impetus for that report?
Well, I think that there is a lot of concern right now about the general cost of a college education, and when the cost rose, people began to be concerned about what the outcomes were. So that report is meant to kind of rebalance the emphasis on investment in higher education as the only way to win.
Dr. Makin, describe, if you would, the modern economy and today's workforce needs.
Well, the modern economy is constantly evolving. It's changed dramatically over the last several years. The workforce needs are radically different from what they were 5, 10, 15 years ago. The emphasis on technology is so much greater today than what it was in times past.
Let's talk about the facts of life in the economy here. I think that one of the things we have to remember is it's kind of like the sex life of the economy. We want to know exactly how this works, and let's get down to the adult story on this, is that entrepreneurs and other people don't create jobs. That's not their aim. Their aim is to make a profit. Employees are a cost. So way back when Adam Smith wrote a long time ago about capitalism, he said that workers were there to be facilitated and maybe abridged. So you always have to remember that there are going to be changes in the economy. They're going to be due to cost.
Well, speaking of change, when we look at Silicon Valley back in the 1990s, only about 10% of the people who worked in that industry, in the IT industry, actually were trained for it. The other 90% received on-the-job training. That is one of the things that seems to have changed, that employers will complain that they don't have a ready workforce, and it doesn't seem to be as many employers willing to do the training. Dr. Makin, can you comment on that?
The expectation that we hear constantly from employers is that when a student graduates from CPI and comes to them, they want them to be ready to go, to hit the road running. We don't have time for on-the-job training. We need you ready to go.
When we went to school, it was considered vocational education, and we all have a notion of what that was. In fact, some people consider it just shop, and of course, it's more than that. But explain this change from vocational education to career and technical education.
When I think about vocational education, I think about the notion that people had that it was an education for people who might not be academically inclined and who could do things with their hands. Today, that is not the case. The line between academic and career technical education has gotten more and more blurred over time. You cannot be successful in career technical education today unless you have the academic underpinnings to support you.
And that's what a lot of people are talking about today, is that we need this blending of academic and job skills.
And I think there's really a misunderstanding of that in that way, because a number of years ago, we had a project related to training precision machinists. At the time we were doing that project, there were career and technology schools in Pennsylvania that were dropping their machining programs and in favor of other things. Now, this was really a big surprise, because at that time, we're talking about four jobs for every person who is trained. I saw some W-2 forms from people who were in these, and they were making fantastic money. And we went around and talked to people in the state and found out that a lot of people, you know, parents, grandparents, and other people looked at jobs like this. They said, well, it's dirty, it's repetitive, and it doesn't use anything. Well, I'll tell you right now, if you look at a precision machinist, you're going to see that they're working in pristine conditions. They have to use a lot of science and math to get their job done, and it's not a routine, repetitive job.
The author of this Pathways to Prosperity report said we have this snobbish idea that if it's not a white-collar job. It's not a respected career.
And it's amazing how deeply felt that is by parents and other people and counselors, too. Because I'll tell you, give an example. We went out and gave a talk about this precision machining opportunity in there. And after it was over, a grandmother came up to me and said, "That's really great. Those are really great jobs. But my grandson's going to go to college," she said. "And if you go to college and get a degree, nobody can take that away from you." And I said, "Yeah, but can they pay you for it?" That's the question.
When President Obama first took office, one of his goals was to regain America's dominance in educational attainment. And his goal specifically was that by age 27, 60% of Americans would have earned a four-year college degree. Right now, it's only about 33%. So I guess my question is, do we need more college graduates? Or what is it that we need to meet the demands of today's economy?
Well, I'm absolutely sure that what we need are more graduates who have gone through career technical education programs, Patty. We literally get calls every week. The frequency of that is picking up from employers who are looking for skilled technicians. Dave talked about precision machining. We held on to our precision machining program. We get calls from Pittsburgh asking us, do we have graduates ready to go?
Well, what do you think of this, Dr. Passmore? Is that a worthwhile goal for 60% of young people to get college degrees?
Educational attainment is just a count. If it's just counting the number of people who have college degrees, we're missing the point. I think that one of the things that we hear every year, probably around September of each year, we get a little report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics that talks about the lifetime income of people by educational level. And every time that comes out, it always shows that college graduates in the aggregate have higher
indisputable wages, right?
However, one thing we have to remember is that there's a great deal of variation in college graduates. Some, as you mentioned, some college graduates aren't doing as well as some high school graduates.
The bottom 25%.
Very different rates of return based on what you invest in. So I would be careful about just saying raise educational attainment. I'd say, what are you doing with educational
attainment? Well, speaking of what are you doing, if you look at European countries, you look at Germany, Switzerland, Finland, for example, there's a huge emphasis on apprenticeships and on-the-job training. And there, unemployment rates among the young is much lower than it is here in the U.S. How do you respond to that, Dr. Macon?
You know, I'm going back to the School to Work initiative that was in place several years ago. And it was a very difficult sell because people started to say that, you know, creating a two-track system was not in the best interest of their children. So it hasn't gained the kind of ground that we have in Europe on the apprenticeship system, because in Europe, they're making decisions very early on as to whether they're going to a college or to an apprenticeship track.
When should that decision be made? Assessment is often taking place in about sixth grade, and there are some who say you are narrowing someone's options if you make them make that decision in sixth grade. It shouldn't be made until you're at least 16, for example.
Well, we don't have the same kind of tracking, I would say, that you would see in other countries based on, for instance, test scores. So there's quite a bit of variation in what people can do. There's very little tracking that goes on like that. By the way, I want to mention that in Europe, apprenticeship systems are much wider in terms of occupations than they are in the United States. Our notion of apprenticeships are in construction, some manufacturing occupations. But in Europe, there's apprenticeship for all sorts of occupations. I mean, everything from retail, trade, to other kinds of things. So it's a much wider system. And one of the neat things is that there's a close articulation with the economy and close work with employers. That's something the career and technology schools do really well. Local schools have very close ties with local employers. They have a better handle on that. So I think that's another use.
What role, Dr. Macon, do local industries have in shaping the programs, and what role should they have?
The relationship that we have with local industry is absolutely integral to the success of our program, ultimately the success of our graduates. Every program at CPI has what you call an occupational advisory committee. That is made up of representatives from the field for that particular program. In addition to that, I have a school-wide local advisory committee that convenes 2 to 3 times a year to basically advise us about our program offerings, about trends that they're seeing, and directions that we need to go.
How would you respond to something I heard recently, and that is that there are lots of young high school students who might benefit from a vocational education, but they're not being encouraged in their local school district because the base school district fears actually for job security, that they could lose jobs if more and more of their students go off and get a vocational education. Dr. Passmore.
I think you're
chuckling. This is an issue.
It is an issue, but I think that the thing we have to remember is that a lot of conception of career and technology institutes, like CPI, is that you go there and you're there, and that's it. I think if you walk around the state and look at all of our career and technology institutes, you'll see a wide mix of students, some of whom are taking programs. There are students who are in academic programs who are dying to get into some of these programs. One of the things that we have to remember about career and technology education, it's not only education for work, but it's really good learning process. One of the things you find all the way along is that you have people having trouble motivating their reading skills or their mathematics. Put them in a situation where it really seems important and counts. I have an example of my coworker, Rose Baker. She was a math teacher in Pennsylvania School District, and she ended up teaching students who were going to be in construction. She went to the Career and Technology Institute, so what math is important? She came back, and she's working on trigonometry problems and other kinds of things that the students who were in the so-called academic track were not doing. And those students who were in the Career and Technology program saw the relevance of mathematics, of their science, and of their reading. It's a tremendous way to deal with learning process. Adults like that, kids like that, they like to see relevance.
Well, that brings me to the Department of Education touting the fact that we now have an 80% high school graduation rate in this country. That still means 20% aren't graduating from high school and their career prospects are very, very dim. Would more direction into a vocational career help perhaps that 20% finish high school?
I think it would help them, but you know, I want to speak to the counselor role for just a second, if I can, Patty. Having sat on the other side of the table and been a superintendent in the K-12 district, we have extremely high expectations for our counselors. It's not unusual that they have a counselor-to-student ratio of 400 to 1. So they got a lot to do, and our experience is that it's a matter of education. And I'll give you the example. Last week, we had all of our counselors in from our three standing schools, Bellefonte, Bald Eagle, Penns Valley. Every counselor was there. We took the time to bring them up to speed on what's new, what's going on, where we're headed. Yesterday, a counselor actually addressed our faculty meeting. So it's a process of educating each other about what goes on in our respective roles.
I think it's really tough for students, counselors, parents, school folks to pay attention to exactly what ought to be done. It's almost like asking the question about what should I do medically? Should I have, you know, there are all kinds of indecision about this. One of the things we're in the business of doing, like occupational forecasts, and you'll see things in the newspaper, the top 10 occupations. These are the ones that pay the most. Well, I'm going to tell you right now that those are single estimates, and lots of things change in the economy. Give you an example. Wasn't that long ago that at Penn State we were wondering why we had a petroleum engineering program.
And now you know why.
No. Yes. Jobs are there because people buy goods and services. The kinds of goods and services that they buy change a lot. So I think paying attention to those projections is the wrong way to go.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these so-called middle-skill jobs. Dr. Makin, what are they and what educational requirement is there to land them?
Well, typically, when you talk about middle-skill jobs, they're jobs that require more than a high school education, perhaps on-the-job training, perhaps an associate degree. When you look at the labor market projections, there is a huge demand for middle-level skills jobs.
How does a vocational education compare in time and money to earning a bachelor's degree, for example, Dr. Passmore?
The costs are very different. If you look at the university costs, that's one aspect of this. You know, a lot of times I think we don't value the amount of time that's involved, too. So a person can be involved in a program that has a shorter time, and they can be out earning quicker in the market and taking opportunities for further education as you go along. So I think that they compare quite well to other forms of investment that we might have.
You know, on the other hand, I know there are going to be people who say, but a college education produces a more well-rounded individual. And should the purpose of an education be just to get a job?
Well, that's a philosophical question and a good one, I think, Patty. But my question would be, what are employers looking for?
I also think if you inspect your own life, you'll find many people are continuous learners. I think that's the important point on this. I'm not devaluing, obviously I'm in the business of higher education. I'm trying to devalue what a higher education can do. But you're not absent those other kinds of knowledges and skills because you don't go to college.
And they're not mutually exclusive. For example, you could pursue a technical education and then a college education. I don't know how common that is, but it's...
Absolutely, yes.
People do. I think that if you look at the National Institute of Machining Skills and you look at some of the certifications that they have, for instance, there are entry-level certifications, but as you go along, they have a definite career progression that you could work on. And it's a very clear progression to work from kind of machining skills into other kinds of skills. So they've thought about that. And it is possible. It's possible to learn skills after you get out of school. People do that all the time.
You know, getting back to this college for all mentality, if you look at Canada, for example, 55.8% of their students graduate from college. That compares with the United States, where it's somewhere around 30 to 33%. In Russia, it's 55.5%. Are you concerned, Dr. Passmore, that we will be less competitive if we don't encourage more college degrees?
I'm concerned that we won't be competitive if we don't have the skills that are going to be necessary to move forward. And I think that I would begin to look at that independent of the kind of institution that you're looking at. We have all this advice out there about the particular occupation that you ought to go for. And as I say, that's a variable buffet along the way. I think one of the things that I think that people need to do and their parents need to do is they need to begin thinking about the future in kind of more strategic terms. So, for instance, we did a study a couple of years ago on the offshore ability of Pennsylvania jobs. You know, are you trying to enter a job that could be easily done someplace else? Could you transfer the inputs or the outputs to some other location? Do you have to actually interact with people? Can you be a barber remotely? I don't think so, okay? So then the other thing is, do you have to have specific social or local knowledge to get the work done? And then could this job be done by following a script? See, those are indications to you, no matter what the job. Now, I'm going to tell you, those aren't just blue-collar jobs. Right now, in Center County, we have a hospital that sends its MRIs to India to be read with a return on those reports the next morning. The radiologist in India may have been board certified in the United States. They make about $14,000 a year. That's offshoring that job. So it's always possible. So when people think about what they're going to do, they need to think about that. And also the other thing that's going on right now is automation. It used to be automation. We worried about robots. Robots used to be able to do one thing. You know, they'd sit there and you'd see them welding something on a automobile line. Well, now robots are beginning to evolve so that they can learn. Now, this is going to change a lot, and it's going to change a lot for every kind of job. So these are all factors that people need to think about when they begin to invest in education and skill training that's going to endure.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guests are Dr. David Passmore, a distinguished professor of workforce education and development at Penn State, and Dr. Richard Makin, president of the Central Pennsylvania Institute of Science and Technology, which is located in Pleasant Gap. While the push in the last few years has centered around encouraging every young person in America to go to college as the pathway to the middle class, more and more people say that career and vocational training can also lead to a middle-class paycheck. And that brings me, Dr. Makin, to the fact that there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 vocational career-type schools in Pennsylvania, but they are not all good. How does someone go about choosing the right school for themselves?
One of the things that separates us from many of our sister institutions, Patty, is the robustness of our adult and post-secondary program. A lot of people don't know that we have many, many offerings for adults who are underemployed, out of work, looking to start a new career. We will continue to serve our 10th, 11th, and 12th grade population, but in the very near future, and it could be as early as next week, we expect to hear that PDE has approved us to award associate specialized technology degrees in different programs that we have at CPI.
Well, you know, the National Center for Education Statistics says that the number of students pursuing vocational education increased by 500,000 between 1990 and 2005. And most of them were looking at careers in healthcare and also in computer science. And I'm wondering, what are the hot occupations available with a vocational or technical degree today?
I'm going to talk about it from the perspective of CPI and where we're headed with our master plan. We just finished and dedicated last year our transportation training center because of what we see going on in the Marcellus industry. Just so happened that the transportation bill was passed. So we're in a position to prepare individuals for work on both sides there, Marcellus and road construction, bridge construction, and so on. Without question, the hottest area, the hottest topic would be the health careers. And yesterday we spent the entire day working with an architect because our next expansion at CPI will be a health sciences building that will house associate specialized technology degrees solely in health sciences.
And what specifically? Dental hygienist? I mean, what are we training?
We have dental assistant right now, so we see that transforming to a dental hygienist. We're looking at things like occupational therapy assistant, physical therapy assistant, respiratory care. We would someday like to expand our practical nursing program to a program where you can earn an RN. We have in the pipeline right now two associate specialized technology degrees that will be approved. The first is advanced manufacturing, and the second is healthcare management.
And health, if you look around Pennsylvania, just about every county is, if not the number one, number two driver of most jobs in that economy. And the other thing that we need to know about Pennsylvania is that we are an old state. Our average age is very old, so healthcare is going to be a really important area in the future. Now, there may be vagaries about how it's going to be financed, but people are there to be served.
You talked a moment ago, Dr. Passmore, about the questions we should ask ourselves in figuring out our career path and then getting on that track to lead to that job. But what factors determine whether we should pursue a traditional college education or a vocational education? And I guess what I'm asking is, what questions should we be asking ourselves?
Well, this isn't a gate that you walk through and close the door and lock. I think what you would find is that the reality in both high schools and in secondary, post-secondary education and the like, there's quite a mix. It's not as though people come to CPI and they've cut off all of their opportunities. And there are people who are in academic programs who are in CPI and other kinds of career and technology programs. So I don't think it's a matter of just choosing one and then going. I think the idea is that you need to be in charge of your educational plan. And you need to have some idea of where you're going, independent of the things we read every month or so about the hottest occupations this month. If you were to believe this right now, everybody has to be a data scientist. A couple of years ago, you would have stayed out of petroleum and engineering. So you need to think about the factors. When we think about projection of opportunities in the future, we not only look at what's driving the economy now in terms of what goods and services are being bought and sold and how labor is used, but the uncertainties in the future. There are lots of changes and there are lots of uncertainties and risks in the future. If you were to put your money down on the stock, you'd be thinking the same way. It's the same kind of investment decision. You need to think about the opportunity now, but what's going to affect it in the future?
Well, how do we erase the stigma that still is associated with a vocational education, that this is for lower skilled students or maybe even troublemaking students?
You have to take the message to the public, in particular to the counselors, to high school administrators, perhaps most importantly, Patty, to parents. And the literature suggests that mothers are playing a key role in that decision-making process of a high school student. So we've got to continue on with delivering the message about what career technical education really is today. And that's something we do every day. I say to the teachers, the most effective recruitment strategy you have, your students. And what you're doing in that program, if you're keeping their interest, if it's a quality program, if it's relevant to them, they are going to carry that message out to other students. They're going to talk to their parents. Those parents are going to talk to more parents.
To what extent today are institutions like CPI and Penn College of Technology actually working with local universities? Dr. Passmore.
I still think that there's probably a gulf between those institutions. For instance, most institutions that would run engineering and technology programs are tending their own fields pretty well. And I think it's very difficult to get that articulation, but I'm sure you have articulation agreements with Penn College and others, right?
Yes, we work pretty closely with Penn College, Patty. We have 19 programs, and I think we have agreements with 15 of them where our students, and this is something that the parents need to hear and something that we're trying to get the word out, our students are earning credits that are accepted at Penn College should they choose to go on to Williamsport.
You mentioned mothers and the role they play in steering students. What role does CPI, for example, play in helping students assess their strengths and their interests?
We work closely.
Because so often we don't know what we want to do.
Yes, and that's an ongoing challenge. We work closely with the sending schools on that. They do the assessment testing, the aptitude testing, and so on. And again, it goes back to have that working relationship with the counselors, them understanding what we've got going on, and us understanding what they're up against on a day-to-day basis.
There's a big gulf still in public opinion about what the role of career and technology schools have been. And I think that that's been more in focus now that we've been having a lot of concern about the cost of higher education. So the public is rightly focused on that. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And so I think that this kind of outreach is really important because a lot of decisions are made in that 14 to 18 to 20-year-old range. Sometimes it's hard to come back and reinvest.
I've been at the business for quite a while now, Patty, and I want to say that what I see going on in career technical education and the perception that people have about it, we're at a better place now than we ever have been.
Why is that?
Because eyes are being opened. When you're able to enter into a partnership, for example, I'll use the one that we have with Case Construction Equipment, and parents see, hey, this is pretty serious stuff. CPI is one of four training centers in North America in cooperation with Case Construction Equipment. They understand. It's what Dr. Passmore said. There's a new reality out there about where you can be successful other than college.
You know, and I think it's interesting to note, I'm reading that the average salary for a dental hygienist is above $50,000. For construction manager, over $90,000. You know, depending upon what your field of study is, it's not a low-paying position.
Absolutely.
Good work is a move toward good adulthood. And that's why you ought to be thinking about these things. I think the other thing that if you were to go into a career in technology school, the other thing that really ought to be seen is that all of the instructors in there have had real life experience. These are people who've worked. They understand what it's like to work. They have an empathy for that. They understand employers and they understand students. Really important point. The other thing is at schools is that they're dealing with all kinds of students. You'll see a lot of concern for student outcomes in this that go beyond school. There's a good feeling in a lot of career and technology schools about the worth of that student in a lot of ways. So it's a really rich environment.
I'm kind of curious to know how completion rates compare in vocational education versus a college education. So many people who begin a college education don't finish. What's the situation in vocational education?
Well, I can speak to it from CPI's perspective. Our completion rates, now and then we have a student who would, you know, after a year or year and a half, decide that they need to go back to the sending school. But I would, I'd say 85% easily. You know, once they start a program, 10th grade, they're going to follow it through to 12th grade.
Parents can check this out because I think that the data on the career and technology schools, both the secondary and post-secondary, are more transparent than they are in colleges. Only colleges now are beginning to show more completion and other kinds of rates on that. So I think that there's a lot of data out there to see.
Should the college for all then be broadened to become a post-high school credential for all?
I think lifelong learning is more important than just focusing on whether you go to college or not or the like. I think that this is the real challenge. Then when you're young, you're getting ready to enter and be inducted into the workforce, really important kinds of things. But if you were to get a certification from CPI or a degree from Penn State, the next year you might have to grow and change. So semper paratus, always prepared. Preparation for lifelong learning is probably more important.
Absolutely.
It's a journey. All right. And on that note, we're out of time. Thank you both so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. David Passmore, a distinguished professor of workforce education and development at Penn State, and Dr. Richard Makin, president of the Central Pennsylvania Institute of Science and Technology. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.